I paid him to say that. He never has been in service. He don't even know what I mean. I think Melanie's chicken shit to invite me up here and then cop out and say she's sick. I'm glad to be here. A lot of these people know me. They're not here because they like me. They're here to keep me honest. I'm really glad that I get to share with those of you who don't know me. I used to speak quite a bit, and then they found out about me and quit asking me, so it didn't used to make me nervous. Now it does. I feel like I'm in this packed auditorium, and we all know it's just because we're in this little closet, and there's really not that many of us. I feel almost overwhelmed. I'll try to... I don't like drunk logs. For one thing, mine's hearsay, you know. Could have told me I did it. And a guy came up here from California once, moved up here, started hanging around. He said the main difference he saw between Utah AA and California AA, as he had known it, was down there they tell what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And in Utah, we tell what it was like, and what it was like. And I paid attention to that because we do that a lot. I guess I was dysfunctional. My family was dysfunctional. You know, I don't know what that is. I hear children of multi-billionaires who, you know, oh, yeah, I'm dysfunctional. And I think, yeah, go to bed hungry. That's dysfunctional. But when I was four, my parents, divorced. My mother disappeared. They were both drunk. And my dad couldn't take care of us, so he put us in a Catholic orphanage in Colorado. And I still got a problem with Catholics and that religion. And here I am in a church. We have a lot of AA meetings in church. I don't have any trouble with the, with what their goal is. It's just a problem for me. When I got put there, I'd never seen a nun. Nuns became my mother, my father, my teacher, my everything. And I'd never even seen a nun, you know, and didn't know what one was. I was 4 years old, and what they are is these great big women, and they wear these great big long black robes that go clear to the ground, cover everything but their hands and their face. And they don't have no lips. They got a blue line. And they don't have hands, they have rulers. They're mean. And that was who was going to be taking care of me for the next several years. And they did, and you know, I guess looking back, there was some good in that. I never went to bed hungry in that orphanage and always had some clothes. But it just brainwashed my ass. You know, I grew up so full of guilt and fear and stuff that you can't believe it. And when my brother, when the World War ended, my oldest brother took me to live with him in Colorado, and he was a drunk. So all I knew about growing up was drunks and nuns. That ain't much of a... I think that's dysfunctional. Lived with him and let him beat the shit out of me for a couple of years, and then my mother surfaced in Utah, and we came over here to live with her and this guy she'd married. He was a drunk, and she was still a drunk. But the difference was, by then I was getting into my teen years, and all they really wanted me to do was stay out of their way. And I got running with some guys in Salt Lake. There were no fences like in the orphanage, and no big mean brother, and I got running with some guys in Salt Lake, and they taught me a lot of stuff I needed to know. And they introduced me to alcohol. And I'd never learned how to talk to girls. And I was getting to that point to where girls really looked good to me. I just didn't really know what you did with them, because in the orphanage we were separated. And I didn't care then, because, you know, that was that age where girls don't look so good. But whiskey. Well, the first thing I ever drank was sloe gin. God, I remember that because it's real sweet, you know. You can drink a mess of it. And it don't make you make faces or nothing. It tastes like fruit juice. And you don't realize it's kicking your ass until it's been kicked. But I wasn't afraid of girls. And I was tough. And good looking. And slick. And rich. You know, all the things I really wasn't, that stuff made me. And I'd go into blackouts, but I didn't know at the time what a blackout was. The next day, these guys would tell me all the shit I had done. So I just thought all of us who drank forgot what we did, and the non-drinkers didn't forget. But the difference was I drank alcoholically from the start, and they didn't. They could remember it. But I got in some trouble. And on my 17th birthday, a judge told me to go in the Marine Corps. And I'm too young to be going in the Marine Corps. But I went. And I was a slick, tough little bastard off the streets. Now they kill you and all that on State Street. But in our day, we just had fights. You know, when you got a bloody nose, you quit fighting. It hurt. You know, but I thought I was pretty bad. And boy, I hit boot camp in San Diego and met my DI, drill instructor. Boy, them bastards are mean. They made them nuns look like nice people. About 10 minutes, I knew I was not mean. You know? And in half an hour, I was bald-headed. They shave every bit of your hair off, not a crew cut, bald. And they take your clothes and give you these great big green clothes. And you'll grow into them, but you don't know it then. And boy, you just don't look, it's hard to look bad when you're bald-headed and your clothes are too big, you know. Some asshole calling you names and screaming in your face and making you do push-ups. And I thought, man, because my choice between going into the Marine Corps, at the time they had an industrial school in Ogden, it's detention center, now they call it, they called it the industrial center then. And he did give me a choice, and I thought the Marine Corps would be glamorous and wonderful, you know. That's why I went, shit, I should have gone to Ogden. But after 4 months, you get out of boot camp. And once you're out of boot camp, the Marine Corps is pretty good if you're an alcoholic. Because you can get in a lot of trouble in the service. But in the Marine Corps, you don't get in trouble if it's alcohol related. I guess maybe if you kill somebody or something, but I never did that. I just forget to come back. When it was Monday, I had to think it was still Saturday or something, you know. Yeah. All they do is... But that was... I was in the Marine Corps 6 years. I wound up a staff sergeant. And so I did good things in the Marine Corps, but I did so many bad things, but I never did one thing bad that wasn't alcohol related. And they excused it. And I got out with an honorable discharge, and I came to Utah and remarried my wife. I had married her. She was the one that wouldn't give me none, and so I figured that's the one I had to marry. But when I got to Japan, well, I divorced her. There was a lot of them over there I wanted to marry. It was sideways. No, that's another story. My wife, Leo. But anyhow, I came back and looked her up and married her again, and we started having babies and doing geographicals. I moved to Oregon and Las Vegas and back to Utah. I just running from Leo, you know. I didn't know it then. I know it now. Well, things are kind of bad here in Utah. We'll go to Oregon. It'll be great. You know, everywhere. If I get to Oregon, there I was in the mirror. But just doing geographics and drinking and changing jobs. I made a lot of money as drunk. I became a realtor in Utah. I worked for Safeway. I had about 48 careers, you know, what alcoholic don't. You know, but real estate was the one I did the best in. I made a lot of money, but in 1970s in Utah, to make money in real estate, all you had to do was get out of bed for an hour or two. You know, they came to you, and I made a lot of money, and so I excused alcoholism by saying, look how well we do. You know, I've got a big house on the east side of Salt Lake, a couple of cars every year, new cars, kids wearing all the finest clothes and all that. But I was really dysfunctional. I'd go to work and come home in 2 weeks or a week or whenever I got done, you know. That's not normal behavior. And all I would do to excuse that when my wife started bitching was say, you had plenty of money in the bank. What's your problem? You know, I just thought that was my job. And I lived that way for a long time. And we tried different things. Finally, some people started telling her I was an alcoholic. And I, you know, they're jealous, you know. And I'd do this shit she'd want me to do because it would shut her up for a while. We went to a Utah alcoholism clinic for a couple of years, and I never did stop drinking. Went and paid shrinks, $85 an hour, you know, and then lied to them. Did a lot of different stuff. And a couple of guys I met there took me to the Alno Club one day in Salt Lake. I got to tell you, it was my first AA meeting, and it's important that I tell you this. Also, if I say some things during the meeting that you don't like, before it's over, you'll know who I am today. I went there because it would get her off my ass. I didn't want to get sober. I knew AA was the dregs of society, but I knew that it'd get her off my ass. And so I went with these two guys that I'd known quite a while, and I sat in between them at the Alano Club. It's important you hear that, because I was very homophobic. I still may be. I don't know what it means, but I... First thing they did was like tonight, they read and all that God all the way through it. And I thought, it ain't working for me. Because, you know, Catholic Church, ta-da, nuns, and guilt and fear. And then some of them got up and lied. You know, I've been sober 2 years, tell this shit. I've been sober 18 months, tell this shit. I've been sober 3 months. And I thought, well, maybe you got to say shit like that so they'll feed him downstairs after the meeting, you know. And I really thought that. At the end of that meeting, this is the part that killed me. They stood up and held hands. Now, I got Marine Corps tattoos. I got one there that says, Mom, that I put on there. That takes a man. And men don't hold hands with men. And I had a guy on either side of me. And they grabbed a hold of my hands and they all prayed. And I thought, these ignorant bastards are taking me to a bunch of Jesus freak queers. And I meant that just... I was pissed. I went out the door. They followed me out. What'd you think? I said, you ignorant bastards. I don't care if you're gay or queer or whatever. Don't. We call them queers then. They keep changing. I can't stay up. They went from queers to homosexuals and now they're gays. And I do try to stay up. And most of them ain't very gay that I know. And we got a lot of them in A. They're all pissed off about something. But I just says, you know, you guys want to go that way, that's fine, but I'm not. And I ain't coming back. And they explain, oh, that's just their ritual. We're not gay. Get in between women or don't hold hands. It's all right. So I went back every Sunday because every Sunday she liked me. Monday she didn't because I drank some more. And I did that for a long time. In and out of AA. But if you keep going, you're going to hear something. I don't know if any of you are new or not. You didn't ask for new kind. You fucked up. You didn't ask. I'm in a Catholic church. You screwed up. Sorry, Father. If you're new, I don't care if you buy this shit or not. Just keep coming back and something, you'll hear something. Something will ring your bell. And I kept going back, and I didn't want to be sober. I made money. I took care of my family. and I was happier when I was drinking. I had a knot in my gut most of the time when I was sober. Pissed off wife all the time. And wife, I just liked it better when I was drunk. And I'd get put in jail. You know, get them DUIs, and I never thought anything about, well, I might have killed somebody or anything. All I thought was the ignorant goddamn cops are out to get me. You know, that's all I could think about. Then I'd make deals with God. Well, get me out of here in the morning and I won't get drunk no more. Well, as soon as I got out, I'd go over to Junior's and get drunk, you know. And I did that over and over and over. I don't know how many of you have ever woke up in a drunk tank and didn't know what you did to get there. That's scary. That's scary. There's usually 6 or 7 Indians in there trying to undress you. And about 5 of them wanted your clothes, and that 6th son of a bitch was scary. You know, he did that so many times. And they charged me my fine, and I'd have to drive for a year without a license, you know, and see them red lights and get all nervous and shit. You know, and I'd just do it over and over. And it was just because I was misunderstood, and the cops were out to get me, and anybody drink, if they were married to her, and it just went on and on. The people in AA tolerated me. I'd get up, I'd volunteer and give talks. I'd go home and tell my wife how many people I saved. I memorized part of the book so I could quote to you, so you'd think I was really this shit. Everybody in AA knew what I was doing, but they tolerated me. And one time she said to me, I had a big book, somebody gave it to me. She said, well, if you're going to meetings every week and sometimes twice a week and doing what you're supposed to do, why do you keep drinking? I said, it don't take till you memorize that book. And she was so dumb she believed me. Of course, about a year later, she said, you ain't trying to memorize that book. But I kept getting a little of what you had to say, getting resentments, a lot of you who wouldn't leave me alone. Bud Blumenthal, he's dead now, and God love him, he had about 16 years. He was always saying AA sayings to me. God, I resented him. One time I was at a meeting whining and sniveling. He said, you're looking for sympathy, and it's between shit and syphilis in the dictionary. Ha, ha, ha. You know. Couldn't stand people like him, and they were all over. One time I decided to get sober. He belonged to the Sugar House group. It's a men's group in Salt Lake. Very macho men. Now, ha ha, you had to have a deep voice to even get in. And God, them guys would get up. Now, you want potatoes? Get a hoe, you know. I don't want no goddamn potatoes. I'll go to Safeway, you know. But I sentenced myself there. Because I hated them so bad, but that was the only place I remembered this stuff. And they wouldn't let you talk. You had to have 6 months sobriety to talk. And I thought, I'm going to get 6 months sobriety just to show these bastards. And I can talk. And I did. I got 6 months. And I also learned a lot about the program. I'd go to other meetings where they'd love me, but I kept my commitment to that one. I went there 2 years and 7 months. I'll tell you what happened in that 2 years and 7 months. I had three kids. My daughter, my oldest girl, worked for me in my real estate office. One day I found out she had embezzled $70,000 from me and my partner. That'll get you drunk. About a month after that, she told me she was pregnant and didn't want to marry the guy she was pregnant by. Not long after that, my son, my hero son, played football and wrestled and all that, came to me and said, Jolene's pregnant, Dad. Oh, well, that's cool. You can marry her. You know, you're the only girl you've ever dated. Okay, we'll get married. So I arranged this big church wedding. I raised them kids as Catholics just to show them what misery was. I didn't go. Really, I had to choose between that and Mormonism, and I chose Catholicism. I thought, you know, which is worse? Who knows? I arranged this big church wedding and paid for it and all. The night before he was to get married, he come up to me and said, "Dad, I don't want to get married." And I said, "Are you out of your mind?" And he says, "I don't want to marry Jolene." I said, "Hey, I've arranged this church wedding and paid for all this shit, and we've got all these people coming." And he says, "But I don't want to marry Jolene. I want to marry Cindy." And I said, "You can't marry Cindy. Jolene's pregnant. And I don't even know who Cindy is." He said, "Well, Cindy's pregnant too." I was still in charge. We had a wedding the next morning. It lasted 3 weeks. Then he left her and took up with Cindy, and they've been together ever since, 17, 18 years? He knew. But I was still in charge. And then my youngest came along. And don't worry about Bill. He and I are friends. He knows who I was and who I am. Bill's not our token black. He's actually white. He's my oldest boy. He come up to me and my youngest, my baby, a model, a ZCMI model, came up to me and said, "Dad, I'm going to move out." That's good, you know. Last kid, I was so sick of kids. You know, they weren't leaving on good terms, but they were leaving. And she said, "I'm going to move in with a guy." It's 1980, whatever. Go ahead. I'm going to have his baby. Big surprise, you know. He's black. That's when the shit hit the fan. He's black. So I went and got me a bottle of whiskey and got out my 30-30 and went looking for him, and I ought to killed him. It's the only time I've ever heard of a good drunk. I got so goddamn drunk that I forgot why I got drunk. And I came out of a blackout 4 months later, and I was sick. Apparently, I'd been drunk and paying this guy I used to know in AA to bring me whiskey and food and cigarettes, and I'd been on it. Totally drunk for 4 months. And I was too sick to want to kill him anymore, you know. And God helped me out on that one. God, I had one good drunk in my life, and that was it. I didn't have to go to the Sugar House Bunch anymore because they didn't like you there if you drank. So, you know, that was good. Totally separated from my kids for about 3 years. All of them. I was glad. Sick of them little bastards and all their bullshit. You don't think they were raised in a dysfunctional family and that might have had something to do with it. I was wonderful. Each got a car when they were 16. My oldest girl called me one Father's Day and said, "I just want to tell you you're a fucking asshole," and hung the phone up. That was my Father's Day gift. My only contact with her for 3 years. But I kept going to AA. AA won't let you go. After a few of them people know your phone number and find out you're sick, they keep calling you and coming over and bugging your ass. And they kept doing that. And so I'd go to a meeting just to shut them up. And I divorced that goddamn. We've been married 24 years, and she wouldn't go to Al-Anon. And when I sobered up, you know, just got a few months sobriety, I knew I didn't like her. And so I divorced her. That's when the kids quit talking to me. That's right. I got that backwards. It wasn't when they moved out. It's when I divorced their mother. She was with you all them years you were drunk, and you just dumped her. She took everything I had but my clothes and one car, but I dumped her. And I had a lot of real estate, you know. I knew how to make money. I just didn't know how to live. And I met one of you, good-looking little girl, and I thought, well, I'll marry her because if I have to get drunk or something, she'll understand. And so I married her. I adopted her boy. She had a boy. He was a mess, being raised by her. She'd been sober 2 years, but she was a little bottom drunk like me. But she had 2 years sobriety. And when I got drunk, she didn't understand. Not for shit. She called up her sponsor, and her sponsor said, throw him out. Did that a few. Anyhow, that lasted a year and a half. And then I became a bachelor. I was happy being a bachelor. I could drink. Nobody bitch. You know how bad I was, though, how conditioned. I used to hide whiskey in my house, and I lived there alone in my apartment. Pour a glass and put it back under the counter, you know. I did that for a couple of years and went over to the private clubs and all and drank a business into the ground. I'd opened another business and drank it into the ground. One day I was sick enough to go to the VA hospital. And I went in there. And I'd been there a lot in this drug and alcohol treatment program. I didn't want to go in the drug one because I'm no drug addict and low life scums, you know. But they made me. That's the only place they had a bed. And I'd been there long enough to where I could go to the cafeteria and eat and stuff like that. You know, they got tunnels up the VA hospital if you haven't been there, so you don't get lost, you know. You go down the tunnel right through there and you'll be in the cafeteria. Go over there and you'll be in X-ray, you know. I was going through that tunnel and I saw a couple of people I knew in AA, named Kathy Cahilly and Brent D, and a girl I'd never met. And I said to Kathy, what are you doing? And they were smuggling Brent out to an AA meeting. He was in there for a bad back or one of his terminal diseases. He gets a lot of them. But and he's been sober 15 years. You know what I thought about? Now, mind you, women caused most of my trouble in my life. You've heard that. All I could think about was, who is that blonde, that little girl there with the freckles with Kathy? That's all I could think about. And it was her. And I knew I was getting well. Because girls were looking good again. I got out and I found out who she was. And she was sicker than I ever been in my life. You talk about being in and out of the program and being crazy, and it was her. And I couldn't get enough of her, you know, and we got to hanging out together. She used me for a long time. She just let me come around when she needed some cigarettes or money or something. She'd go, and I let her. Something told me that she was the one, but I don't know what it was. And finally, we moved in together, and when she wasn't running off, I was kicking her out. We did that for years. I'm not talking about a week or a month. We did that for years. And she'd been living with Donna Marilyn. It turned out they brought her from Nebraska. And when she'd run off, she'd go out there, stay. And they'd let her. And I didn't like them two anymore. God, I mean, if they'd mind their own goddamn business, she'd have to stay here and face the world, you know. Threaten them on the phone and shit like that, but Donna Marilyn didn't ever tell her no. I don't know if they've ever told anybody no. But we did that for a long time. One day she came to my apartment and said, I want you to give me some money, loan me some money to get my own apartment. And I said no. And I lived in this U-shaped apartment complex up on the second floor. And she left all mad and screaming and shit. Went downstairs and I was out on the balcony and she's out there in the middle of that. Kids playing and, you know, all the neighbors and shit. You're a lowlife motherfucker, she's hollering. And I'm, God, you know, I live here, you know. No. Shit. Thought she was crazy. I was glad she left that day. And that night I went to St. Benedict's. They had a meeting there at that treatment center. I used to go to it every Wednesday and Friday. And I never thought she'd be there because she was being so crazy and stupid. And there she was. And she'd come up to me. She'd probably been clean about 15 minutes and I'd been sober about a week. And says, if you're ever going to marry me, do it now. Or if it ain't done tomorrow, we ain't going to do it. And I went to Elko the next day after she'd done that to me and married her. And everybody that knew me said, you have lost your mind. And everybody that knew her said, you have lost your mind. It's pretty bad for a couple of years. She loves Demerol, and I love whiskey. And two of us into our disease trying to live together, it was sick. It was sad, sad. But neither one of us ever could get away from AA. We knew too many people. And one day, 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago, I'd had enough. And she'd had enough. God was in charge because he had to have enough the same day. And I made a commitment to God and to her and to myself that I was done drinking and done doing without her. And she made the same commitment. And, you know, we've kept the commitment to this minute. I don't know what happened. I think God just got tired of our shit. So, you know, these two would be good for each other if they'd ever clean up their act. And we've had just such a good life together. I don't recommend, if any of you aren't married to an alcoholic, don't marry one. They're different. You know. A lot of what I used to think, though, was alcoholism, I have since learned, is just the fact that she's a woman. Now, I thought I had just married the three craziest goddamn people in the world. Because all three of them acted alike in a lot of ways, you know. And I got to going to Al-Anon. A bunch of them Al-Anons conned me into going to Al-Anon. And in them days, it was mainly women. You might have one or two guys in there. Usually me and Brent D. were the guys. And he's in all the programs. EA and OA and TNA and SA. Well, first thing they wouldn't do was let me talk about her, which kind of hurt my feelings, because that's the only reason I wanted to go to Al-Anon, was tell them how rough my life was. Well, she ain't here. Why don't you tell us what you did? Well, I'm telling you what I did. Let me tell you what this bitch did to me, and here's why. Well, she ain't here. Tell us what you did to her, and tell us what you said, and tell us what part you played. God, I hated them Al-Anons. But I kept going back, and one of the things I found out from all them women, and all the women I run with nowadays, and there's a herd of them, AA and Al-Anon, is that women and men are just different. You know, they find shit so serious that we just don't even think about, and we find shit very serious that they think's inconsequential. Becoming a high expert with a remote control is important to a man. Women, why don't you leave it on that station? I was watching that show. Well, I'll be back there after a while, you know. I never found one woman yet that would do that with any class, you know, or would shut up about it. Or sports. They hate sports, you know. Sports are very important to men. You know, I care very much what happens in the world of sports every day. It's important to me. Oh, football, are they going to score any points, you know? They get strikes, you know, she don't. She'll go in the bathroom smiling, come out bawling. Who mugged you in the bathroom? Yeah. Men go in there and do their business and come out, you know? Stink it up a little and forget it. They go in there and think, you know. She come out of there the other day and said, Leo, do I look like a hooker with lipstick on? How do you answer that? I mean, even my mother wore lipstick. Yeah, all women wear lipstick, look like hookers, yeah. But she was serious, and I've learned to smooth my way through that shit. She thinks I'm hard of hearing. I just, I've learned. I've learned a lot in sobriety. When your mind clears up, you learn a lot of shit to avoid, you know. I never learned all that until I got into my 50s because I never was sober. I just thought, screw them, you know. But in sobriety, you have to learn a lot of tricks. My kids. My son, until recently, ran that Harmon store in St. George, and he didn't lose that store. He gave it up. He says, too goddamn much pressure, and I want to go watch my son play football. He don't drink or do drugs. That Cindy that he married that I didn't want him to marry, best daughter-in-law a man could have, idolizes me. Treats me right. She does, don't she? Oh, she idolizes Donella and tolerates me. Oh, yeah. My oldest girl's been married to the same guy 17 years, raised 5 little Catholics, happy as hell. Her husband's a good, hardworking man. Me and him have been friends for all them years they've been married. My youngest never did marry that black guy that knocked her up. I was right about him. He was just going around knocking up honky chicks. But she's married to a really decent white guy from Texas. And they got a little girl, 2 years old. And that black kid I wanted to kill is 18 years old and plays football for Hunter High School. And I'm his only grandpa. And me and him just totally respect and love each other. And he got me over being a racist. He didn't. God did. Hey, here's a tuber for you, little bastard. You know, now. Reggie's one of the joys of my life. But I have 9 others, all different colors and shades. Yeah. God knew. You can't talk to me and say don't be a racist or, you know, God, I love them all equally. And they love me equally. And none of them live at my house, which they really love. 2 of my oldest grandsons are parents. God, that made me feel old when I'm going to be a great grandfather. You know, I'm 10 years old trying to figure out who I'm going to be if I ever grow up. I'm a great grandfather. She thought it was wonderful, you know. My kids and my wife, she's too young. They don't think she's their stepmother or anything, but she's the closest friend they got. And all the grandkids think she's grandma because we've been married long enough to where most of them weren't born. They all think she's grandma, and she spends a lot of time and money on them kids. And I don't have to, and that works for both of us. And have a really close family. And see, I got 10 minutes. You thought I was going to go over, didn't you? I want to talk about this bunch. A few of them are here tonight. How important they are to me. It's the reason I finally really got sober and grew up. All these people were coming into AA. They'd go through treatment or whatever, and they'd get sober. And I wouldn't. And I've been coming around. As of now, I've been coming around AA for 25 years. But I'd look at them, Ernie or Don or Clyde, and I'd think, I know I'm smarter than that son of a bitch. How come he got sober and I'm still drinking? You know, and I thought maybe it was really a secret society or something that you had to pay money or know the secret or you didn't get the key, you know? Because I read the book, went to meetings, did 12-step work. I lied about it mostly, but I did go on some 12-step calls. What I finally did was start hanging around with these people. And do you know what they do that I didn't do? They actually worked all 12 steps. I mean actually worked them. I just kind of said, yeah, okay, yeah, I've worked the steps. I know what they are. I can read them. I can say them without looking at the book. I found out you've got to live this program. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Well, I just left out thoroughly. You know? Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Well, completely, I left out. I know that now. These people, and they tolerated me, and they all got involved in service, and, you know, they were being GSRs and DCNs and shit, and I'd just hang around with them, and one day, well, Leo, it might be your turn to be a GSR. Might be your turn to stand for alternate DCM. And I didn't really like that. I used to go to them business meetings and sit in the back and take inventories. I like that. That's fun. But, you know, when you're got your butt in the chair, it's work. But I actually started doing so much of it that I liked it. And I started watching people. Don Huff's a good example. He's taping me. No one ever buys these. It probably ain't even got a tape in there. He does it for my ego. He told me somebody bought one of my tapes once. He taped several years ago, and it was Don Huff. He didn't tell me that. And I swelled up. Somebody bought my tape. He's the quietest, nicest man I've ever met. He walks the walk. He don't do much talking the talk. He's kind of boring when he talks. That's probably why he don't talk much. You don't want to put you to sleep. But he has more action than anyone I've ever met. He started like 30 treatment center meetings over the years. He'd go anywhere and do anything for AA. He served in all the positions in AA, including delegate. And I paid attention to him after I quit resenting him because of her. And Don's family to me now, you know, they raised Donnell. I didn't know it then, but she's got her own story, and she come out of a dysfunctional family, and Don and Marilyn raised her and brought her to Utah. And Ernie, Pat, there's guys all around this table. Bill, Clyde, you know, these people just walk the walk. They don't just talk the talk. They're here tonight to support me. Most of them work. They should be home resting. No, I'm going to Heber. Leo's talking. And you saw him here last week and the week before. I support them. My wife had major brain surgery three times in 2 years. There were so many people in the waiting room that a nurse asked me one day, is she a movie star or what? I didn't say to her, no, that's a bunch of drunks and Al-Anons, you know, but we get total support, and I give away what I found. I did all I could in service. I'm going to use the rest of my time to tell you a story about ego and service and supporting other people and all. The only job that I didn't do in AA that I really wanted, I still don't know if it was for my ego or because I thought I would do a good job or both, I wanted to be the delegate. That's the guy that goes back to New York and represents Utah, goes all around here and tells what's going on at GSR and GSO in New York. The only problem was Pat Harris wanted to be delegate too at the same time. And I owe Pat a lot of loyalty. And he owes me a lot of loyalty. And I went home and talked to Don Ellen. I went out and talked to Donna Marilyn. And I talked to some people I trusted. And they said, you got to do what feels right. Well, I decided he had earned it more than me. And even if I couldn't win it, I thought I could win. You know, my ego said, I'd kick his ass, him and Tom Finn. But by saying I didn't want to do it, I gave up the dream of being the delegate. I just didn't want to take one vote away from Pat. And I thought God would be happy. But there's more to it than that. When I was growing up in that orphanage, Mickey Mantle and Yogi Berra and Billy Martin and Vic Rashi and all them great Yankees were the stars. New York Yankee teams, they won like 7 or 8 World Series in a row. And they were my heroes, and the New York Yankees were my heroes. And I was thinking, when I was thinking about delegate, Utah pays my way to New York. I do my job, stay a few extra days, and go to Yankee Stadium and watch the Yankees play. It's been one of my lifetime dreams. And when I decided not to be the delegate, I thought, Well, okay, Pat, I hope you appreciate me. I didn't say it, but I thought it. We lose a lot of dreams over our... In 60 years, I've reached a lot of my dreams, but a lot of them have gone by the wayside, and I thought, there it goes, ever getting to Yankee Stadium. And I was okay with it. I thought God will be happy with me, and I can see him on TV, but for my 60th birthday, my kids threw me a surprise birthday party, and it couldn't be a surprise because Pat and Joyce had invited us to go to their place at Havasu, and I had accepted. So Donella had to give up the surprise and tell me, you can't go to Havasu, your kids are throwing you a surprise party. But I just thought it was get together with the kids and grandkids and some of our friends here they invited, and I'd act humble and be grateful, you know, and all this shit and eat dinner. And what they had done is the three of them had gotten together, bought me tickets, airplane tickets, to New York City, a hotel on Central Park, and tickets to Yankee Stadium. My three kids who went 3-4 years without talking to me. And I don't cry, because I think it's bullshit. But they got me bawling in front of my grandkids. And all my friends in AA and Al-Anon, they got me bawling. And my son and my two son-in-laws and I went to New York, and I went to Yankee Stadium. And it's how a nun has to feel if she ever goes to the Vatican, you know. I was on sacred ground. I was there, man. I was tingling. It was one of the neatest experiences of my life. And, God, we rode the subway. You know, she said, don't get on that subway. You know, we hear all the shit out in Utah. We took a group conscience. Them guys ain't in AA or Al-Anon, but we took a vote. My asshole chicken shit friend, son from St. George voted no, but we had him 3-1. He used to think he was tough, and St. George has turned him into a wuss. And our hotel was right next to Mickey Mantle's restaurant. His family still owns all this. And they hired a limo, hauled my ass all over New York. You know, we went to Wall Street and Statue of Liberty and all that. And I did all that sober. The only hard part about it was not smoking on that plane. God, I'm going to the bathroom. I found out it's a federal crime, you know, so I couldn't. But, so I'm doing the serenity prayer. Wish they need to hurry that plane up. But it was just, God knew how important going to New York was, but he knew that little asshole put himself aside. Pat didn't win for delegate anyhow. They went to the hat, and Tom Finn won. They drew his name out, so it didn't matter anyhow. You know, I knew what was going to happen. I'll summarize. You've been a great audience, and I know I talk in circles and ramble. I'm no speaker. I'm so grateful to my friends here. Darlene came up. She had a stroke. She has a hard time even walking, and she came up those stairs. And it was important for her to be here. And she knows, you know, she's just... I was in Mazatlan with her a couple of years ago. And her and Dad, Elmer and Joanne. Robin was in a coma a couple of years ago. We all got in a coma with her and loved her better. And took care of Bill. And made sure he was all right. What AA is, nothing more than people helping people. And it took me forever to figure that out. And if I wake up every morning, God's not a Catholic, he is a Catholic. My God, he told me he could be whoever I want. I get up every morning and say, I'm a drunk. Help me get through the day without drinking or hurting anybody. That's quick first, second, and third step. And at night, I do a quick 10th step. I say, God, thank you for getting me through the whole day sober. Who do I owe amends to? And most generally, it's no one. Sometimes it's someone. Well, a lot of times, someone thinks I owe them amends, but I don't. It don't count unless I do. You know, that simple philosophy. And then I say the Serenity Prayer sometimes about 8,000 times a day, depending on what's going on. I got a great life. I'm married to... She can't do enough for me. You want to get on her bad side, say something about me and mean it. You know, you better like me or you're in trouble with her. And I never had anyone treat me like that. She worries too much about me, but we got a great life together. We're both sober. She don't do any drugs or booze, and I don't drink. We got a great life together, and I know God just saved her for me till it was her turn. And I just want to thank everybody in this room, everybody I've ever met in AA or Al-Anon, for teaching me the things I needed to know so that I could show up here tonight sober. Thank you.